I don't know why, but just as I came into the room, I remembered being in Sri Lanka and receiving teachings on the seven factors of enlightenment. And being quite skeptical about it. Like, okay, teachings about the seven factors of enlightenment. Am I going there? Like, what is this thing? One factor a day, and I was really kind of half amused and half frustrated, and not really trusting this business. So there was this very, very sweet monk in the monastery at this time, and we had a chat, and I told him, like, he asked me what I'm doing in my practice, and I told him what I'm doing, and you know. And I said, well, I'm working on the seven factors of enlightenment, and I don't think I'm getting anywhere. And he said, oh, don't worry, it's guaranteed in the text. You only have to follow it methodically, and you'll be fine. And he had this very sweet trust that that's okay, it's all guaranteed, it's written. So I just wanted to share it with you, so maybe if you have a slight doubt whether or not you are halfway through, because we're almost halfway through the retreat, guaranteed. They also had this little competition about it. It was like, that was in another monastery, and like, you have a chat with someone who is staying around, and then, where are you from, and what is your name, and, you know, have husband, no husband, why no husband? And then, got the bojanga? Have you got them all together? Have you got all the seven factors of enlightenment yet sorted? And it was very sweet to see that they actually, you know, they ask you the same way they ask you if you have a husband. They ask you if you are enlightened. It's kind of, you know, it's part of the game. Like, it's part of what we're doing in life. Maybe we get married, maybe we get enlightened. Because I really think we can get a bit heavy about it and a bit serious about, you know, the practice and what we're doing. And this is a serious business here. We're talking about enlightenment every day, in a very systematic way. But it may not have to be that serious and that heavy. And it's very sweet to see people that don't look enlightened at all tell you that they've got it. And they check with you every day, maybe tomorrow. So please keep checking. Truly, I know. Our part is not knowing, but looking, and touching, and loving. Our part is not knowing, but looking, and touching, and loving. So, going through the seven factors of enlightenment, we started with mindfulness, which is like looking. We look and hope to see what is in front of us. And then we moved from what I feel like a rather distant dynamic, looking, into something that is more risky, more challenging, and much more interesting, touching, the factor of investigation, of bringing myself into the situation and feel it and get to know it through touch. Which, if we think about it, takes a lot of courage, because the thing that we are going to touch may not be smooth, may not be that pleasant to feel. And I think many of us felt it yesterday. I think yesterday in many ways was a dukkha day for the retreat. Talking about the five hindrances in the morning, talking about dukkha in the evening, and in the groups and in the interviews, so much dukkha. So maybe now it's time for love. Maybe now it's time to take another step in our journey towards seeing what is going on here. What is this mystery called life? And this morning, Kefet talked about effort, which is what comes after investigation. We investigate, we touch, and we feel the texture, and the warmth, and the moist. And we get to kind of feel more closely what's going on. And then we can sometimes get the sense that this is not quite right. That whatever it is that I'm touching at the moment doesn't feel right to me. Or sometimes what I touch does feel right, and I do want to hold it a bit longer. So there is a process of discerning, of seeing what is what, and then applying some kind of skillful approach. Because love is not a passive state. Love is when we dare to engage. And sometimes with engagement, we start by saying, this is helping me, and this is not. So one question that came in the group today was, okay, say I understand that there are different kinds of efforts. Say I understand that some patterns in my mind are worth giving more nourishment to, and some are more suitable for deprivation. I know that some things that are going on within me is good to cultivate and support. For example, a sense of trust, a sense of I am okay as I am, a sense of there may be more ways around it than I can actually see now. So these kind of things, when they pass through the mind, we have the feeling that it's actually good to give them some more power. And other thoughts or other mental processes in the mind, we have the feeling that it doesn't really help us. I get angry again, frustrated again. Again and again, the same fear. Again and again, the same belief that I can sort this issue by doing something about it. So this person in the group said, okay, so I can see so many things going on. I'm not always sure what is supporting me and what is not supporting me, and I don't know what to do. And for me, it's actually a very good question because it shows that we actually look at the teachings. The teachings are not there for us to swallow. The teachings are there for us to explore and to question and to ask. And maybe before we move to one answer that is coming from the sutras, it can be useful for you to actually reflect on your thoughts today. And see if there was something in your thoughts today that was clearly helping you, clearly bringing more ease and joy and clarity. Or was there something in your thoughts today that was actually pulling you down, taking away your strength? There may be one dominant thought, or there may be just so many thoughts today, and maybe 10 of this kind and 50 of the other. But just try to remember your thoughts today. And see how many of them were helpful. And if helpful, in what way? How many were unhelpful, and in what way? Sometimes looking through the text can help put things in categories. So I'll read for you a part of the sutra and just listen and see if it touches anything that has to do with what you've been thinking of today. Bhikkhus, these three kinds of unwholesome thoughts produce blindness. They produce lack of vision and absence of knowledge. They obstruct wisdom. They are not conducive to Nibbana. What are these three? Essential thought. Thought of ill will and aggressive thought. Have you had any of the three? שלושה סוגים של מחשבות גורמות לעיוורון, מערפלות את החזון ואת הראייה, גורמות להיעדר ידע וחוסמות תבונה. מחשבה קשורה בתשוקות החושים, מחשבה קשורה ברצון להרע ומחשבה תוקפנית. And it's interesting because there's nothing wrong with feeling lust, with feeling passion, with feeling sexual desire. But if we're honest about it, it does blind us. We all know that when we are very strongly attracted to someone, we think they're just perfect. We're absolutely 100% sure they're just perfect. There's no problem in it, but just to be aware of the fact that we're not very clear in what we're seeing. The same when we have a sort of ill will, or when we find ourselves being aggressive or angry. I really like this sutra because it's so practical. There's nothing moralistic about it. It doesn't say, you know, don't have this because this is bad. It just says if you have it, watch and be aware of the effect. But luckily enough, the Buddha was also very positive. Because these three kinds of wholesome thought remove blindness. They produce vision. They produce knowledge and the growth of wisdom. They are conducive to Nibbana. What are the three? A thought of renunciation. It's a very interesting one, again, if we don't go to the extreme of moralistic views. It's not that we should not feel desire, or we should not fulfill desire. But when a thought comes, and it's a thought of desire, if we can renounce it, we may be able to see more clearly. To let go of it. To leave it aside. And it's not easy, if you think about it, because when this energy of desire is there, it's not that easy to put it aside. But at least if it's not there, we can see more clearly. And sometimes it's not there. Often after many years of delusion. The other kind of thought that does not obscure clarity is a thought of friendliness. And the third kind is a thought of, the way he puts it, a thought of harmlessness. So there is a thought of a sense of being friendly. And much better than that is the sense of not having the intention to harm. So again, when these thoughts are around us, there's more chance that we'll be able to see clearly. But again, אנחנו בצד של הטובים, והשלושה הטובים היו מחשבה על קרן, מיננסיישן, ויתור. קרן היא ממונה על הצד הלמדני שלנו, כי קרן היא תלמידה טפלית. אז כל מקום שצריך תרגום, אנחנו איזה, זה לא דווקא מיננסיישן. ויתור או הנחה או זה, אוקיי, כאילו, תחכה בצד עכשיו. זה, פיננסי. הדבר השני היה ידידותיות, friendliness, והשלישי היה harmlessness, חוסר המוטיבציה להרע. שוב, אם אנחנו עוקבים אחר הנחיות הנזיר המתוק שדיברתי בסרילנקה, אין שום בעיה. תזהו את המחשבות שלכם. חיובי תזינו, שלילי תעזבו. It again looks very simple and easy. We only have to recognize. If it's worth maintaining, we maintain. And if it's not worth maintaining, we let go. And that's it. How do we do it? Do we have to do it? I remember being, I think some of you may know because it was such a traumatic experience, but I did tell about it to some people. I was on a retreat again in Sri Lanka and I had my little hat for a solitude. So it was like a hat, with nothing around it, a shower, and another hat just next to it. And for a while I was alone in the hat. There was no one in the hat next to me, and my practice was great. It was an absolute pleasure. And then after a while came this lady, and she moved into the hat next to me. And I think from the moment I saw her, there was this kind of, you know, sometimes it happens. You look at someone, you don't have any real reason, you just don't like them. And it was obviously the other way around. But we are very holy practitioners, so. So she started her retreat and I continued mine, and we're not talking. And after a few days, a little note under my door. Please don't flush the toilet at night. It disturbs my sleep. So I was very careful not to flush the toilet at night. A few days later, another note. Please don't sweep your room between 2 and 4. And then please don't do your walking meditation in front of the hat when I'm eating my lunch. And it went on and on and on. And it was like, you know, very silent, but very clear. And it actually did bug me. She managed to put her words in a way that put a lot of doubt in my mind. And I really started to believe that I am a very lousy practitioner. One note was, that was amazing. She said, going up, it was on top of a hill, and part of my day was going down to the river every day, sitting by the river and coming back up. And it would be like 3 hours altogether, and I did it every day. And it was my little pleasure, like Shaila's cup of tea. And then came a note saying, 3 hours every day, you're out in town. Is that your retreat? And it did catch me. You see, it did. I was really unsure. So maybe I am not a serious one. And then, of course, I started seeing that she's reading Harry Potter. And that helped me a little bit because I felt a bit, you know, kind of, okay, we're equal. But it wasn't easy. And it actually got worse. And there was a teacher, and he was supposed to meet me for an interview every 10 days and discuss my practice and my study of the sutras. And him being the way he is, often I would go after 10 days to meet him, and he was out in town. And then the car would broke, and it would come back a day later, 2 days later, a week later. And if I missed him, because I wasn't waiting by his door all the time, so, and then he was gone again. And I really had to find my way around this thing, and it became more and more difficult, and I didn't have any guidance or any help. But I felt that I was getting full of self-doubt, full of anger, and very full of ill will. I wished her all the bad things. Really. And then one day I was just about to go out for my walk, and she was doing her walking meditation. And she made a point of walking just in front of my door in a way that it was actually quite difficult for me to get out without facing her. So I sat there on my little bed, and I couldn't go for my walk for the moment. I didn't really want to get into, you know, this kind of confrontation. So I just sat down. And I looked at her. And she was walking up and down. And suddenly this thing came to me. I said, you really hate her. It was a real strong sense of hatred. And the next thing I've noticed was this kind of question. Is there anything about her that you don't hate? So I looked at her and I asked myself, is there anything about her that I don't hate? And I realized that I don't hate the fact that she has two legs. And I kept looking. And I didn't hate the fact that she has two arms. And I didn't hate the fact that she had short hair and gray. And it was an amazing experience because I was sitting there and, you know, more and more things in her that I don't hate came to my mind without trying, without, like, it wasn't something that I could think of as a good exercise. So. And gradually my heart softened. And then I realized how much it hurt me to hate her all this time. And what a relief it was, just knowing that I don't hate the fact that she has two legs. And it went on, I thought, I don't hate the fact that she's 54. Because in one of her notes she said, you know, you're only not 39, 54. But in that moment I didn't hate the fact that she was 54. And the fact that she was from the town that she was from. And I actually started to have a deep sense of appreciation to the fact that she's 54 in this place, which is not an easy place to be. And she is doing her best to practice. She is doing her best to see something beyond her conditioning. She's actually doing exactly what I was trying to do. And there was a sense of sisterhood. And her name is Rita. And I remember writing to a friend sometime after, I said, that was my Rita with Rita. Because I learned so many things during this time, but that was really the big shift. Just this shift from thoughts of wanting to harm someone, thoughts of ill will, thoughts of desire to get rid of her, very strong desire, to a state of mind where there was no desire around her at all. I mean, I really didn't care. I didn't have any intention to harm her, and I even felt a sense of friendship, a sense of sharing something very precious together. And we often hear about the teachings of friendliness. And I think it wasn't a mistake that this thing came to me, because this center that I stayed, the whole teaching there was metta. The only thing you would get as teachings was be friendly with it. Stay. Be friendly with it. And it was so simple. It wasn't a big thing that you have to sit and practice in a specific way, and if you do it methodically, you may get it at the end. It was something that if I was around it for a while, with my heart sufficiently open, a situation would come and it will just get in the picture. And it wasn't, and I want to be very honest with you, it wasn't that I felt that I'm going to walk 10,000 miles for her. I wasn't going to do everything I can to help her. And I was quite happy when she left. But it wasn't this burning hatred. It wasn't this burning anger. It wasn't this burning hurt. And what deeper than that is the sense of connection. And I think maybe this is part of what the Buddha is pointing to when he says here that ill will, desire, a wish to harm, blinds us. We don't see the connection. We get to believe in separation. We get to believe in conflict. We get to believe in almost a war on territory. Is there something in here that you don't hate? Try it next time. It may work. So this, it is interesting that in this sutra, the Buddha mentions it as an important aspect of the path to enlightenment. Because when we're talking about the seven factors of enlightenment, we didn't mention metta. We didn't mention love. We didn't mention friendliness and care. And then we can get the impression that we can go all the way to enlightenment without the heart. Without dealing with the heart. Without touching the heart. Without looking at the heart. And it was so beautiful for me today to read this piece of the sutra in the context of the seven factors, because it was like, I don't know if this is a factor, but it's definitely an underlying spirit without which nothing is going to move. Doesn't matter how much you practice the seven factors of enlightenment. If you do it out of anger, out of resistance, or out of desire, it will probably not work. Maybe this is why this monk was okay and I was looking for my chance. So what is it that actually keeps us in this realm of resistance? What is it that kept me hating Rita? What is it that kept Rita hating me? That was that. So with that, we have another story. And this is not from the sutras, but this is from the commentary. The story is that there was a group of monks receiving meditation instructions from the Buddha. And it was probably instruction for meditation focusing on the breath. and they received instructions, and the Buddha said, okay, go to the forest and practice. They went to the forest and practiced, and it was perfect, like my room at the beginning of my retreat. Everything was absolutely what they needed. They didn't have any trouble getting food, they didn't have any trouble keeping warm, getting water, finding a comfortable place to sit, a comfortable place to sleep. It wasn't too hot. And their practice went very well for a while. So they're very happy. And suddenly things started to change. They come back after going out for begging their food, and the whole place was a mess. They would put their bowls and go to wash their hands so they can eat. By the time they came back, the bowl was turned upside down and all the food was spread everywhere. They went to sleep. Terrible winds and noises. Things flying around them. It was getting very scary. It was getting very difficult for them to stay in the forest. And they were so scared and upset that their practice didn't go anywhere. So they've decided to go back to the Buddha and ask for another forest. Say, this forest is not good. Please give us another forest because we love the practice so much. We want to continue with the practice. But here, this is not possible. And you may know this feeling of, just give me another life story so I can get enlightened. This life story is too difficult. This mind is too impossible. So they went to the Buddha. And the Buddha sent them back to the same forest. He said, I cannot give you another forest. We have to come back and sit on the cushion again with the same mind. There is no mind exchange. But he said, I can give you a different practice. I can give you some other instructions for your practice. And that may help you. And the instructions that he gave them were in so many words. He said, doesn't matter what happens, try to avoid thoughts of ill will. Try to avoid the intention to harm. So they went back to the forest and they practiced according to the instructions. And surprisingly enough, soon after they started practicing again, things started to settle down. The winds were much more possible. There were not so many, you know, teasing things about their food and about their water for washing. And they kept practicing and they thought, okay, this is working, so we can continue with it. Constantly freeing the mind from thoughts of ill will and from the intention to harm. And gradually, not only that the bad things stopped happening, things started to be really weird. Like, they would get up in the morning and discover a beautiful kind of shed for them to sit. So when it's too hot, they don't have to sit in the sun. They go to town to beg for their food and come back. And there were buckets of water waiting for them to wash their feet, to wash their hands, so they can sit and eat without any delay. It was time for them to go to sleep, and all of a sudden there were beautiful mats and spaces for them to sleep, so they didn't have to struggle. And that got really weird. And then they decided to go back to the Buddha and see what is happening here. Went to the Buddha. Buddha said, yes, I know. Before you came here, the forest was not empty. There were three spirits living in this forest. And they were very happy because it was a perfect forest. When you first came, they were very happy. The way we are happy when we have new guests. But what happens when the guests stay too long? They simply felt that their space is being invaded. So there was a bit of fear, actually, with the spirits. So they tried to get rid of the monks by making them scared. We have fear. We have trying to push away. We're creating fear, conflict. And then you just stop this cycle. Because at some point you stop feeding the fear, you stop feeding the negativity. And once you stop this, it just stops. So it really is up to you how far you're going to take your trust in this kind of stories. Because here we see that a change in the practice can actually change the world. Not only the inner world, but also the interaction around and the way others relate to us. And you may say this is bullshit. But maybe not. Maybe some of it is not quite. It's only this determination not to feed a thought of ill will. Not to feed the thought of anger. You know, when I did manage to see Upul after he would come and go, or was in the wrong time, I did manage to see him, and I had a question about fear. And I said, I have so many fears, and they keep coming. And being in the place that I was, I have a terrible fear of bugs, and this place was full of them. And it was just constantly in my face. I was like, fear from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to bed and through the night. It was just constant fear. And I said, I don't know, it keeps coming. Tell me what to do. And he said, it's not your business to do. If they want to come, let them come. You don't have to feed them. They get hungry, they go. They can just stay until they get hungry, and then they go.
The fear,
the bugs stay. That was something that he did say to me. He said, well, they've been here before you, and I promise you they're not going to go. But I don't have to feed the fear. I don't have to feed the negativity. I don't have to feed my aversion. And sometimes from this lack of nourishment that we give to the difficult feelings or the difficult emotions, something can slowly quiet down. And in this quiet, we can realize something quite different. Because when this 100% identification with the fear is not there anymore, we can be open to the possibility that we may be much bigger than this. I may not be just a pile of fears, a pile of negative emotions, a pile of aversions. And I use this term pile deliberately. Because what we are is actually a pile of things that we believe we are. And when this sense of me being so separate, me being so special because of my fears, because of my anger, because of my conflict, when this sense eases a little bit, we can feel the connection. I remember once going through a very difficult time in my life. I went out of my home on the way to a yoga class. And I was very angry with all men under the sun. I was so angry. And the thought that was on my mind all the way to the yoga center was, the first man that comes in front of me will pay for it. And it was strong. And then I got to the yoga center and this beautiful Sasha opened the door and gave me a hug. It was just not there anymore. It was just a human being meeting a human being with no story. It was just pure touch meeting pure touch. So it wasn't my place to know what is the destiny of all men. It was just for me to be in that moment and see what happened. And then I could actually receive the contact, receive the support, receive the love. And from this space, we can actually understand the words of the Indian teacher Shantideva. He said, I should ease the pain of others, because it hurts like mine. When me and others are the same in wanting joy and not wanting pain, what is so special about me? In the same way that different limbs are part of one body, why can't we see that different beings are part of one life? Let's sit together quietly for a few minutes. Truly, I know. Our part is not knowing. but looking and touching and loving. May all beings be happy. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings be safe and free from harm. May all beings be healthy in body and mind. May all beings live with ease.